November 4th, 2008. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Hi, it's Jeff Robbins, back with episode 66 of the Lullabot Drupal Podcast. This week we've got an interview with Bill Fitzgerald of Funny Monkey. They're a company based in Portland that focuses on Drupal for education and educational institutions. Bill is the author of Drupal for Education and E-Learning on Pact Publishing, which comes out later this month. And we're going to talk to him about the different ways that Drupal is being used in education and what both higher educational and what we call high school here in the U.S., sort of, what is that, lower education? what ways that Drupal is being used in education and its educational institutions. But first, Lullabot is organizing the Do It With Drupal conference, which is happening December 10th, 11th, and 12th in the French Quarter of New Orleans at the Marriott Hotel. We've got a host of Drupal and non-Drupal web celebrities who are coming to talk about building successful Drupal websites and successful community-based websites. We've got Chris Perillo from Locker Gnome, who will be speaking, Lane Becker from Get Satisfaction, Tara Hunt, who's the author of a new book called The Woofy Factor, which talks about sort of building capital in social networks, that type of thing. Of course, the whole Lullabot team will be there speaking and helping out at the sessions. John Resig, the creator of jQuery, will be speaking. Ryan Srama, the creator of Ubercart, Earl Miles, who we've had on the podcast several times, the creator of Views, will be speaking, and many, many more. If you want to find out more about this, the Do It With Drupal seminar at www.doitwithdrupal.com. And as I said, that's happening December 10th, 11th, and 12th in New Orleans. So register now while there's still spots available. All right, let's get to this interview with Bill Fitzgerald. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me here, Jeff. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So let's start with the very basics. Where are you calling us from? Where are you based out of?
We're based out of Portland, Oregon. And although we actually are virtual, and as luck would have it, the three main people within Funny Monkey, me, Mark Porras, and Jeff Graham, all live in Portland.
Right on. Well, there you go. So sort of virtual, but you could all go to the same Starbucks and, you know, still be working virtually from there.
We would never actually go to a Starbucks.
Oh,
but,
there you go.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's the little bit of the Northwest that's made its way to the East Coast, and I can go there and feel like I'm in the Northwest. But, you know, for you people in the authentic Northwest, you can go to more authentic coffee shops.
You know, in Portland, we're very protective of our beer and our coffee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's a good way to be, I guess. Yes. So, tell me about Funny Monkey. You guys have sort of found your niche in the educational zone. Is that all you do? How do you describe Funny Monkey to people?
Well, yeah, we work primarily within education. We also work within, you know, with for-profit training organizations. We also work with nonprofits. And we actually would, I mean, we evaluate every job that comes to us on its own merits. So, I mean, we would work in other areas, but given kind of our background and our interests, that's where we want to be. I worked as a school teacher for 16 years and a technology director within K-12. Mark, my partner in founding Funny Monkey, worked in industry for a little under 20 years, and Jeff Graham, a developer who works with us, was the lead Moodle developer at Humboldt State before he joined us.
So you guys have your educational cred, your ed cred, I think.
Yeah, yeah. We're simultaneously education geeks as well as actual real live geeks.
So how did you guys get? How did you personally get involved in Drupal? What was sort of your path to that finds you in the Drupal world?
You know, it was pretty fun. I mean, I was working as a teacher, and you know, I started using the internet to basically do really basic things within my classes in probably late 90s. And then just did a variety of things, learned database design as a part of that. And then was actually, and then Mark and I started Funny Monkey a little over 4 years ago. And initially we were actually going to build out the best darn desktop-based planner grader you'd ever find. And we were looking for a way to support our users. And we were looking, we knew that we didn't just want to have a product, that we also wanted to have a means of supporting customers and actually creating a community around the product. And we started looking for basically web-based tools that could support that. And we evaluated probably somewhere between 20 and 30 different web-based tools, and everything from Plone to Mambo to WordPress to Drupal, just kind of running these things through their paces. And it was when we stumbled onto Drupal that I realized that we actually had it completely wrong, and that this best little planner grader was a flawed idea at best, and that there were just some serious things that we needed to rethink. And we started building out Drupal sites maybe 2 months after that, and never looked back.
Huh? Yeah, it's always interesting to see people's how they kind of came into Drupal, and how most of them sort of passed it by the first time. It's usually yeah. There's something that clicks in your mind, and you go, wait a minute, this is actually really good.
Yeah, I would love to say that it was all part of a well conceived, perfectly executed plan, but that would be completely untrue.
So you have a background as a teacher, and so what sort of what are the different ways that you are using Drupal you're not teaching now, but are the different ways that you are finding that people are using Drupal in education now?
Well, yeah, I mean that's a huge question, because the range of ways that people are using it, it's actually pretty similar to the way people are using it outside education. That's actually one of the things a lot of people, both inside education and outside education, are often surprised by. But, within education, you'll see people building out, again, very straightforward public-facing websites to describe a school, to describe what a school is about. And that's very comparable functionality to what a company's website would be. You have, the about pages, you describe the people working within the organization, you describe the organization's mission, and then, basically give people who are interested in the school or the organization a place to give feedback. I like this, I don't like this. And that's, very, very high-level overview. That's a basic school web presence.
Not very interactive is what you're saying, but sort of more of a brochure kind of thing, which certainly universities and most schools need their brochures. So there's that aspect.
Yeah. And within education, there's this doesn't happen everywhere, but frequently there will be tension isn't necessarily the right word, but there will be basically, people within admissions and within marketing will want one set of functionality for the web presence, and people with on the academic side will want a different set of functionality for the web presence.
Right. Yep.
And often working within education, it requires basically taking a little bit of time to tease out what is going to be highlighted within the website and how it's going to be highlighted. Within K-12, this also brings up issues of student privacy and protecting student identity. Which is very, very significant issue within K-12.
Right, because when you get the students interacting on the website, you want to be sure that that's hidden off for K-12, so that you're not having there's privacy issues, particularly around what is it, 18-year-olds and younger in particular?
It's primarily COPPA, Children Online. Protection Act, and that's under 13. But there are also, yeah, I mean, there are also, you know, serious issues around 13 through 18 that need to be taken into account. Depending on the school, you know, some schools actually are, you know, basically encourage students, particularly high school students, to have their work published, you know, again, be publicly visible. Other schools aren't comfortable with that. Sometimes that's a protection issue. Sometimes that's a, you know, it comes down to an admissions or a marketing issue where there are concerns that basically seeing kind of, you know, raw, unpolished student work could potentially set a, you know, send a wrong message to somebody who just happened to land on that page off a Google search, for example.
Right, right, right. Interesting. Huh. Fascinating. And so, that's sort of the K through 12, uses, and yep. Then it's, and we talked about brochures. What are other ways, that you're finding? I mean, like I said, I mean, we were, you know, when you talk about, oh, Drupal and education, you know, you start thinking, okay, well, that yeah. could mean this, but that could also mean what, giving quizzes on the web or online universities or, you know, I mean, it starts to like,
yeah.
it starts to really untangle and get very, very complicated very quickly when you talk about Drupal and education.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I mean, in some, yeah, I mean, you know, delivering quizzes online, I mean, and then, yeah, from a very kind of teacher directed place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there are some sites that, yeah, really have students logging in to respond to teacher-driven prompts. But then there are also other sites that have a real kind of flattened hierarchy where it is actually a publishing community that is at times centered around classes, at other times just centered around ideas.
Yep.
We've brought a few sites live like that over the last few years. You know, we have one site in particular at we built it out for a nonprofit in New York City called Teaching Matters. And the site's at writingmatters.org, and it's actually pretty complex and pretty slick online magazine publishing site. And teachers can join this site and use it for free. For schools that are interested, there's basically some professional development curriculum that can be delivered in connection with the site, but as one of the end goals of the site, basically students publish articles within their e-zines, and then the teachers of those e-zines can promote those articles to be featured on the homepage of the site. That was a really fun site to build because it's you know, there's some design pieces in there that are relatively complex, but all set up to really simplify the interface for the user. But it focuses on, I think, one of the really exciting potentials of Drupal within education, which is a way to provide a safe place for students to work and publish, but then to ultimately have that work be publicly available. And it does it all within a place where students can interact on a peer-to-peer basis and actually interact. Each e-zine is set up by a teacher, but within within the e-zines, all the users are more or less equal, mm-hmm. and it provides a pretty nice paradigm for what progressive education could look like.
Right, right. Huh. And so are there, like, it seems like there's also any educational institution is also a community.
Yes.
And so then all of the community tools can start to be, mirrored on the website, right? So,
absolutely.
How do you tend to handle things like, well, I guess like classes could, or special interest groups, you start to think like, oh, organic groups. And maybe what we should talk about a little bit is the Drupal education, Drupal ed distribution that you guys put together.
Yeah.
And sort of maybe some of the ideas and sort of philosophies behind, what that's sort of, intended to tackle, what problems that's intended to tackle, and maybe how to tackle them. How'd that distribution come about?
When we started building out the distribution, you know, it was the initial building for that started taking place as we were experimenting with different solutions that we would actually implement on client sites. So kind of the thought that went into it was a combination of things that, you know, I had seen was important for my own teaching. And also I used Drupal for my last couple years of teaching as well. I delivered classes in Drupal-based sites that I built for probably a year and a half before I left the classroom. So it was, you know, in some ways kind of shaped by that direct experience, also shaped by feedback I received from other teachers, both, you know, directly face-to-face conversations, and also I lurk on a couple higher ed listservs, and these are folks who have actually been using Drupal since, you know, 4.3, 4.4. So people who are very familiar with what it's been able to do over the years. But then also taking into account what clients were asking for. So we use the initial site as really just kind of a place to execute thought experiments. We use the Zen theme because it was just a very convenient and very nicely executed theme. So thank you for that.
Thank you for the compliment.
And we basically put it together as a way of thinking about how to use organic groups, views, and user profiles together to deliver basically that combination of a class presence along with an informal working group presence. And finally, we released it out largely as when we released it out, we our kind of thought slash hope was that it would be actually used more as a learning tool, mm-hmm. as a way of people to go in and actually, you know, do some reverse engineering on views and do some reverse engineering with organic groups and profiles, just to kind of take a look at different ways of building these things out using core Drupal and contributed modules.
Yep.
And kind of our goal in building out the distribution was to first off show how you could actually set up, you know, show how you could set up distributions, show how you could use unmodified Drupal core in a way that's sustainable, because obviously for all the obvious reasons, never, ever hack core. And then as a learning tool, so people could start to see different ways of working with views.
Right.
And it was designed for people who don't know PHP and have no plans on actually learning PHP, because there's some snippets here and there, but by and large, it's all done just through the administrative UI. And our ideal kind of audience for that was people within small organizations who might not have who might not be staffed, or might not have the money to actually get something like this in house. And then we had no idea what to expect when we released it out. But then we released it out, and you know, within the first 48 hours, it was downloaded close to 2,000 times, which
wow.
we were like looking at the download stats on, and we no longer do that kind of navel gazing. But we just
sure you don't. Late night on the weekend. I think we've all been there. I mean, it ebbs and flows, but every so often you just go and you watch your web stats, you know?
Yeah, it's good. It's very, very good late at night after many drinks.
Yeah.
we were blown away by by the response to it. And now what we're looking at is, you know, we'll probably do one more release for the Drupal 5 version, but then actually do a pretty thorough rebuild for Drupal 6. Mm-hmm. Because now all the Drupal 6 modules that we need are in pretty solid shape. So it's, you know, we need to sit down and kind of, you know, take stock of what's there. But actually, our goals for Drupal 6 with Drupal Ed would be to actually create actually something that's less of a, you know, less of a learning tool and more actually of a solution, mm-hmm. for schools who want to actually build out that community space within their organization.
Right. So what do people get with the Drupal Ed distribution as it stands now? There's a database that comes with it, and you can install that, and you're kind of up and running early, right?
Basically, all of the modules are bundled in with it, and you have the database that contains the configuration options. And yeah, so basically you install the database, you edit the settings.php file to point to it, and you're off and running. And that configure site gets you, comes with organic groups pre-configured, user profiles. We're using, again, because we developed this in release out of April 2007, we're using BuddyList for basically, you know, friendship across user profiles. We're using Bio to generate user profiles. But each user also gets their own personal dashboard that tracks the content they put up on the site. So any image they put up, any podcast, any, I believe we are using the, embedded media field to handle embedded video. But basically get a dashboard showing, a quick overview of their activity within the site.
Cool. And so basically you can create what can you using the organic group stuff, you can create classes, and you can create other types of groups, I assume.
We have, I believe we ship it with either two or three different group types. One is courses and the other is, I believe, called study groups. Mm-hmm. And we might have a third in there for, you know, for clubs. And the way we have the permission set, basically only people in the teacher role can create classes, but anybody within the site can create a club or a study group.
Huh.
It gets at the idea where you have, you're going to have classes, but you're also going to have ad hoc groups working.
Right.
And one of the things that often, you know, comes up in sites using organic groups within schools is, well, what happens if a group goes away, and stops actually being used for anything? And by and large, what people come to is that that's not necessarily a bad thing, because if you actually look at how we work together in the real world, you know, we often come together around a specific goal for a set time period, and then, we solve whatever issue it is we need to solve, and then we stop meeting. So actually having the group archive what those people did is often useful for, you know, basically creating an institutional or a community memory.
Cool. I'm looking through the modules that are included with this. Boy, it's got to be difficult maintaining a distribution like this, right? You've got Bio module, which I was heavily involved in, although I've been less involved in, and seems to be kind of going away. Buddy list, which you're saying is sort of going away as well.
Yeah.
You get things like that. It's like, migration and all this kind of stuff. So you've got calendar module. Do you have sort of the ability to put up calendar kinds of stuff as well?
Yes, like, absolutely.
That's definitely something that that people need, right?
Upcoming
events and things like that.
Well, and also assignment list too. Basically, every student is presented with a list of upcoming assignments. That's actually part of their dashboard. They can see the assignments for all the groups they're in.
Wow, this is cool. And then you got TinyMCE.
Yeah, and.
A Drupal distribution that comes with a WYSIWYG editor. Hooray!
we've actually switched to FCK editor, and for the 6th version, we actually will switch to FCK.
Uh-huh.
Just because we found some JavaScript conflicts with I'm trying to remember the module that it was creating the conflict with, but we were actually launching a site last spring, like April 2008, and we were using Tiny at that point. And I want to say it was actually with Image Cache.
I've heard that. Yeah.
It was with Thickbox. There were ugly things happening. We were able to isolate it down to Tiny.
Huh.
So we switched out FCK editor because the other things were must-haves. I would personally love to see a more Drupal native WYSIWYG editor.
There's been some work in that direction. I've definitely been seeing some stuff. There's a there's a group on groups.drupal.org. I think they've been cross-posting to the JavaScript group.
Yeah.
But I think that there might just be a WYSIWYG group that's also and apparently Nate from Lullabot was telling me this that there's some really cool stuff happening in that that's very exciting, so I'm excited.
I've been tracking some of that. There's a WYSIWYG API in development,
right?
That's been pretty exciting. It's been pretty exciting seeing that come along. That was one of the things where, you know, Our personal preference is, you know, we're not huge fans of the text editors, but within education, period, like it's a must have. People need to have that. We felt pretty compelled to include that in there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think everybody's found that, you know, you like to try and convince the client or whoever they are that, oh, you know, you'll be fine without a WYSIWYG. No, I don't know how to make it bold. You just put strong tags around, you know, it's like, nah.
Yeah, no, you're
I think once anyone's used a WYSIWYG editor online, you know, any
yeah.
of what we call normal people, regular people, you know, the yeah. people out there that you run into on the street, once they've used a WYSIWYG, they don't want to use anything else on the web.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating for those of us who have to implement it.
But it's just the kind of thing where if you're actually concerned about standards, the WYSIWYG editors are, you know, they do really cruel things to standards.
They can do some awful things. and you know, and there's all these options, and you get excited about turning on all the options, and before you know it,
yeah.
you're allowing people to insert font tags, and you know, and you know, make all the tag, every single character in their post is a different color. It's like, oh, look at that. Look how creative you are. You're very creative.
I've never encountered that.
Oh, you've seen things like that. We've all seen horror shows. We don't want to talk about them. We put them out of our mind. So that's a good segue. So what are some interesting ways that you've seen Drupal use in education? I mean, you know, these things that are in this Drupal Ed distribution, it actually looks like it's very flexible, and you can do a lot of stuff that schools want to do with that. But have you been involved in any sort of interesting fringe cases with Drupal?
I have a hard time saying. I mean, but the short answer is yes, we probably have. I guess I have a hard time kind of seeing something as necessarily a fringe case, just because.
Sure.
For me, it's those fringe cases that really turn into the really kind of fun
yeah.
development work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So fringe is definitely the wrong word, but we were involved with some work that was going on at the Harvard Graduate School of Design, where they basically wanted to build like just kind of like a social network kind of thing, you know, if you were at the school, it'd be a good place to just make this as your you know, start page, your homepage for your browser, because it kind of showed like what was going on, you know, everything, sort of like all kinds of stuff. What are shows that people are going to, you know, like like concerts, you know, and all sorts of like different kinds of stuff that were sort of, you know, almost like a little, you know, Facebook or MySpace kind of thing for the school. Of course, better designed than MySpace, it being a design school. You know, they not a good place to use. But, you know, things like that, it's just sort of really interesting uses. Like I said, I mean, these are just sort of communities.
We've actually built out kind of two sites like that recently. One is actually for teacher professional development, but it's a full-on social network around teacher professional development. And we built it out for a nonprofit called the Center for Teaching Quality. And it's at teacherleaders.org. And the public-facing piece is really just, you know, it's a nice site describing what what Teacher Leaders is all about. But it also has a series of probably close to 1,500 resources at this point, which are, some of them are articles, some of them are book reviews, and some of them are actually just kind of personal narratives from the classroom. But then available to all members is, every member has a user profile. The profile actually shifts depending on who's viewing it. The owner gets a different view of their profile than somebody else who's visiting their profile page.
Yep.
And the profile is basically the jumping off point for the entire site. And the site has a couple different group types. But the thing that was really fun about this is what they wanted people to be able to flag resources stored within the site as discussion points within the group. So we set up a mechanism where whenever any site member is viewing a resource, they have the ability to flag it for a group reading library. So they just – and there's – so basically every time somebody's logged in looking at a resource, they have a link to flag this post for one of your groups. Click the link and you can just drop it right into one of your groups, and it then shows up in the group reading library. And that discussion can kind of take place around these different resources. So it's a nice way to tie in the content that already exists in the site with kind of the more flexible person-to-person interactions that occur within the group. But then there's also the social networking aspect where you can learn more about other people who might not necessarily be in your group, but who are interested in similar things. And we're kind of tying that all together using actually taxonomy with both discussion, you know, with, you know, keywords around discussion posts and keywords around user profiles.
Huh. Drupal must be a good resource for just putting up a lot of information around universities. I mean, there seems to be you know, endless numbers of PDFs and forms and stuff like that. I mean, whether it's for a class or for, you know, at any level of granularity, right? You know, whether it's for a class or a group or for the school as a whole.
There
must be some interesting. I know that like in the library sciences and libraries, they get very excited about the way that Drupal integrates the taxonomy system. Around that. It seems like that stuff would probably carry over pretty well to education as well.
But yeah, it's funny. We did some work like that last year. And what we did is we tied Drupal into Fedora, which is an open source document repository.
Mm-hmm.
And Fedora uses we were using basically a version of Dublin Core metadata within the Fedora repository was, and we actually tied the Fedora Dublin Core metadata into Drupal's taxonomy. It actually had a really flexible mapping system where you could basically specify which data stream would get mapped to which taxonomy vocabulary.
Hmm.
You could switch it out from site to site, but what we did is, are you familiar with Fedora at all? Have you ever worked with that?
No, I haven't.
It's And, you know, in Drupal, everything is related to, you know, a node ID. In Fedora, I forget what it's basically. Fedora's kind of tied around the PID. I forget what the P stands for, but it's
some sort of an ID.
Yeah. So you can upload, for example, a video, and you can then have it create different derivatives of that video, and they're all tied together via the same PID. So you can have, you know, the large version of it, then you can have the flash version of it, then you can have screen caps of it, and each of those are unified through the PID and are made available through different data streams. So what we did is we mapped each data stream and created flexible displays. So you could say by default, I want to display this data stream, and the others will be available via links or will just be listed out as text or not listed at all. So that way you could show thumbnails of photos and have a link to the full size picture, just to make it more efficient on server resources. But this was entirely based on taxonomy, because we mapped Dublin Core into Drupal taxonomy, and the site was actually used by middle school students. So all this Fedora stuff was on the back end, and the complexity was pretty invisible to the end users.
That's always a good thing.
It was a lot of fun because the people who were creating the site was actually, it was done, we were working with a guy named Dave Cormier at the University of Prince Edward Island. And we built this out they were actually creating some primary source materials about the 100th anniversary of the publication of Anne of Green Gables. And the middle school students were doing research about the novel and then, you know, tying in these primary source materials. And it was just really fun to see the kids interacting with a pretty complex set of primary source materials there was a lot of complexity behind the back end that they just quite frankly didn't need to know about, but it was that complexity on the back end that made it easier for them to find the stuff they were looking for. And yeah, I mean, that's where, you know, you talk about, you know, Drupal and kind of storing and organizing large amounts of data, like, you know, the blend of content types and taxonomy, it lets you do a whole lot. And then when you design it right, you can really present a lot of functionality to the end user in a way that's easy to access.
Yeah, that's very cool. I mean, there's been some sort of document management stuff done in Drupal proper. But I still have yet to find like that there's like a real sort of canonical solution to that. And this Fedora stuff is really interesting. For people who are interested in finding out more about that, I have found it at fedoraproject.org.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
When it comes to, I've had those same issues with document management in Drupal, and I'm personally banking on some combination of asset and RDF.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you probably got a better finger on it than me. Until somebody tells me about it on a podcast, I don't know.
I was actually really just glad to see the patch that Andrew Morton was pushing through. I think the hook file patch landed.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Is this ever going to land? And thankfully it did. So I think that'll be nice for 7.
Cool. So you're liking the asset module? Is that I heard that correctly? Right.
Yeah. We need to actually do some testing on recent versions of it. But there's been kind of a lot. There's been a lot of work on. Or at least, you know, some good discussions on groups.drupal.org about ways of using asset to unify handling different different types of media.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one post by the maintainer of the asset module who I've never met him before, but I've, you know, obviously just know his work through what he's put out on drupal.org, where he was talking about a user interface that just basically has a field where you either upload a file or enter a URL. And I think when we start to get to that level of simplicity for file management, have the magic happening on the back end.
Yep,
we'll have gotten somewhere.
Cool. Yeah, very cool stuff. Roger Lopez is the person that made Asset Module.
Yeah.
Well, I'm spitting out URLs. Drupal.org/project/asset is where I found it on Google. Google.
Yeah. Well, and this this post was actually by Arthur F. I don't actually know his name, but that's his groups.drupal.org username.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yep.
Let me see.
Or asset manager. This is the problem.
I'll actually pull up the URL to the specific post while we're searching here, because
we get it wrong. Steering people towards the bad module. No.
Yeah, the
there's also CCK asset.
Yeah. The post that I was talking about, it's in the object embedding flash group, and it's the future of the asset module by Vim Mosby. And I'll shoot you the URL in via Skype.
Yep, yep.
So there's a there's a list of links afterwards, we can just drop that in there.
Sure, cool. Great. Awesome. But yes, that is the same module. Good. We had the right module.
Sweet.
Come back, everyone. Come back. So you've got a book coming out.
I do have a book coming out.
And it happens to be about Drupal education.
Yeah.
Want to tell us more about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm actually just really delighted that it's coming out. It's a lot of work to write a book.
It is. A lot of work to write a book. It's way, way more work than you would think. You gain a new respect for authors, especially, I don't know if you've met these people, and it's, you kind of get sort of want to squint at them a little bit, but authors who just kind of, you know, they do it. They don't complain about it. It seems as if it's no trouble for them. I wrote a new book, you know. John Resig's like that. John, jQuery. He's like, I'm writing another book. It's like, really? Oh, God, I hate it. Yeah, I don't know. I just do it. It's like, oh, wait, man.
you have a book coming out.
Yes, we wrote a book for O'Reilly.
Because I'm definitely the kind of author that complains about it.
Yeah, no, I understand that. You are my people.
But yeah, with that said, I'm really excited about the book, because the target audience for this book is basically people who are working within education who did not write code. And we explicitly wanted to write a book that addressed that audience, because, for a couple of reasons. I mean, first off, I think that there's a lot of really good and really useful developer documentation, but the amount of documentation that really empowers people who don't know how to code, I think it's there, but it's not necessarily collected all in one place, and it certainly isn't collected in any kind of a version specific way. So what I was trying to do with this book was to kind of come up with a very specific use case, and in this case the use case is building out essentially a social network with user blogs and group functionality that will work within a school context. And in the process of doing that, we were able to cover CCK, and again, adding a variety of different content types, using the audio module for podcasting, embedded media fields to take care of media, some pretty detailed tutorials on building views, including getting functionality by cloning existing views and, using the views access control system and using views arguments. Mm-hmm. But basically, views too is amazing.
It really is.
It is unreal.
Yeah, we had Earl on the podcast a couple of times in the past few podasts, got to talk about views too. It's cool.
But yeah, and big congratulations to him too on being the Drupal MVP over at PACT.
He is a very valuable player. I mean, just by creating views, not to mention panels and views one and,
views one is phenomenal. Views two is just the additional functionality that you have just built within actually the core views two module is an incredible step up, but the user interface that lets you access it, amazing. But in the book we cover how to work within that UI and just basically build out a variety of different views. And then the other piece we spent a little bit of time focusing on is how to tie all these pieces in via an intuitive navigational structure. So we look at the relationships.
Did you say intuitive navigational structure?
I apologize for that.
Wow, intuitive. I'm trying to get my head around. That's innovative. That's cutting edge. Wonderful. Certainly having non-intuitive navigation is something you see on a lot of websites. It's like people think, you just toss the website up there and that's all you need to do. I think sometimes Drupal.org is a good example of that. Certainly if you look at the work that's been done, in research for the redesign of Drupal.org, and interviewing people and they say, I don't know how I have bookmarks for everything on Drupal.org because I don't know how to find it through the navigation.
For us, that intuitive navigational structure really comes down to just basically stripping away options and making sure that you're clear on what your users are going to be doing.
Yep.
A lot of the stuff we put in the book we included in there as, directly because of lessons learned from building out sites for clients. For us kind of building out that navigational structure, and this is what we cover in the book, it includes making sure you know what your users need to do and only presenting them with those options.
Right.
So that way, it really gets down to eliminating any extraneous or confusing links.
Yep.
And that's where creating custom menus is key and block visibility is key.
Yep.
We go into some detail on that, and then also, tie in the ability to use views to create menu items and then to use the menu system to get those together into one kind of separate menu, and then make sure you're displaying that in the right places via the block admin settings.
Cool.
I think we have actually. I got an email this morning from in the book is published via Pact, and I got an email this morning from from the publisher of Pact asking about code snippets for the book, and I think there may be two.
That's like our book. I mean, there are a lot of very code heavy Drupal books out there. But I think a lot of people who are developing Drupal sites, if you look at it like the people who are developing WordPress sites, it's not about programming. It's about assembling and maybe there's a little bit of CSS work and stuff like that. You know, it's sort of techie, what we call the VCR kid, the one person on your street who's actually capable of programming a VCR, who also is probably capable of setting up a blog site or maybe setting up a Drupal site and, isn't interested necessarily in writing a whole lot of code. So that's great. That's been the focus of our O'Reilly book is trying to write a less code heavy book, which ironically for O'Reilly, who's known for books with a lot of code, but that's great. That's it. And sounds like exactly what people in education need.
That's what we're trying to hit because there's a lot of,
if the downloads of the Drupal Ed, distribution or any indication, you should be number one on Amazon in the first 10 minutes.
What I'm kind of excited about though is, between our book, your book, John Van Dyke's, book on, Drupal 6 development, and then the theme books. I mean, there's a core set of books that will handle, I think, the different training needs for Drupal 6.
Yep.
The media book as well that Aaron Wimborne's putting out. There's some nice options out there for people who are building sites with Drupal, and these options, I think, more than at any other point in Drupal's trajectory, are pretty clearly tied to people's both interests and skill sets.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
By the way, do you know somebody who's capable of programming VCRs, or ours frustrates me no end.
This 12 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 12 o'clock. So just in case anybody missed it, the book is called Drupal for Education and E-Learning, and it's on Pact Publishing, and Bill Fitzgerald is the author, so you can find that on... Is it actually out yet, or it's coming out soon? Right,
It is. It's coming out soon. I'm running through the pre-finals now, and I need to actually review those. It's due to be out in November, and I think that's actually. Let's put it this way: I'll be incredibly disappointed if that doesn't happen. And the only way that wouldn't happen would be if I got hit by a bus. So let's hope I don't get hit by a bus. This thing will be out by November.
We'll keep you on the internet and out of the trajectory of any buses.
Thank you very much.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Bill. That was really interesting. It's really interesting to hear about the different markets that Drupal's being used in. There seems to be such a like wide variety of different ways that Drupal's being used that it's easy to find these sort of pockets of things that have their own sort of their own ecosystem going, and definitely education is one of those. And I think for people like myself who tend to, we do a little bit of work for that, but tend to be other things. It's really interesting to hear what's happening in that world. So,
well, hey, yeah, thanks. And, kind of working within education, it's always fun to see what's happening in, the converse is true. I mean, it's always fun for me to see what's happening within other areas, because that's actually where I learn a lot about some of the things that I then want to integrate within education-based tools, just basically what's happening in these other areas. So, thanks for having me on. It's always good to talk with other folks in the community, and Yeah, it was a good time. Thank you.
If anybody has any questions for Bill about this, feel free to post them on the podcast comments, and we'll have Bill come back and answer them there. Or maybe we'll have him back on the podcast to answer, however that is. But definitely, I'm sure that there are a lot of questions that this has brought up. So feel free to post them there. And you can find Bill at funnymonkey.com.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, take care.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye.